Good evening, everybody. This is Christopher Buck.
And Leanne Elize.
With Humanity Healing University, and we are here this evening to discuss with you the latest in the stellar codes, the one for this particular period of time, Alcyon.
Yeah, Alcyon is one of the, you guys there are following the stellar codes since the beginning. We kind of touched Alcyon and the Divine Feminine when we worked specifically with the Pleiades and with the Spica stellar code. They incarnate the Divine Feminine multiple aspects of manifestation of the Divine Feminine. But in this particular period of time, we are going to talk a little bit more about Alcyon, because Alcyon is, it's according to spiritual beliefs, and as if this is not a new thought, it's actually a very old thought, that Alcyon is where we have the central heart of this universe, or, you know, not the galactic center per se, because it's not
it's not galactic center, but it's referred to as the central sun.
The central sun. There's a lot of discrepancies on the thought, including of astronomers, that the galactic center will be more in Alpha Centauri, and it is actually a black hole, but is the center of this universe, I would say the heart center.
Traditionally, Alcyon was, astronomers considered Alcyon the center of our galaxy, and it wasn't until modern science came along that they were able to determine it wasn't technically the center, but it was the theologists like still refer to it as the central sun or the spiritual center of our galaxy.
So Alcyon in itself being the central sun is a very interesting particular place. So the old tradition, ancient traditions that were rediscovered by the theosophy, I would say rediscovered because has been part of books that some of them disappeared, others were rewritten in a very metaphoric language. So not everybody would have access to the real information because they really thought that most of the people didn't have the understanding and could misuse information, and special information, and how to connect with those stellar beings or receive the energy and create the energy. So according to ancient wisdom, Alcyon itself is the center heart of the galaxy and the universe, of our, section of the universe, and is a place where is concentrated the most amount of schools of training of souls for diverse causes or diverse missions. It is like a big school. You have another path. And this, we have been working on that as well. We have been describing the seven cosmic path that is presented to the human being after they conclude their, their earthly school. There's seven different paths that we can choose to pursue after here, after Earth. And some of the, you guys know, some of those prefer to go to continue on Earth and help others. Others prefer to go away, and there's what you call the Path of Cyrus. I'm going to just discuss a couple of them. You have the Path of Betelgeuse, which is another school of training, but that school of training is basically training spiritual souls, as we are, that had human experience, to now experience a life or incarnation as a planetary being, so the soul that decides to do that would go to the regions of Betelgeuse to be trained to be a planetary logos. And other souls, they choose to go to the magnetic path, what they call the magnetic path. And the magnetic path are the schools concentrated, I would say, in the community around the Alcyon Sun. So Alcyon is not only the central temple or the temple of the central sun of our universe, but is also seen as a cosmic metropolis with the diverse school. I mean, you know, the image that I have in my mind is almost like Alexandria in the ancient times. There was a capital of, you know, Rome at that time could be the big
that was the political center.
Political center, military center, but Alexandria was I would say the center of knowledge, of study, of expansion, philosophy, and wisdom itself. So this is something that's a image that comes to me specifically when we talk about Alcyon. But Alcyon is more than that. Alcyon as well incarnates a very powerful aspect of the Divine Mother. I'm not talking about the mother, the earthly mother, like the Essenians, had the idea that you have a heavenly father but the earthly mother, and for them Mother Earth was the earthly mother. You know, the mother was always with each children and to take care of their body, mind, and soul in the material world. But we're talking about the Divine Mother, the divine complement of God in the higher sphere. So there is a powerful feminine energy that encircle and is still in a lot of veils. We can foresee that, like the seven veils. So you have Alcyon being the center of the seven Pleiades, and maybe that's the reason they say that Isis had seven veils. But it is the powerful energy behind Alcyon is definitely a feminine energy. So, but anyhow, to talk about Alcyon, we necessarily need to talk about the other six Pleiades. And the magic of the number seven, which is basically the vibration of this perfected being, it's seven. When you talk about seven Pleiades, immediately what comes to mind when you meditate about the number seven, the seven Pleiades, the seven veils, it comes to your mind, I hope so, your seven chakras. And each one of the Pleiades have a very particular influence on the seven chakras, starting from the bottom, and the top one is Alcyon, because Alcyon has the most powerful electromagnetic field and make all of them circulate around it as a big pillar. So if you get the system of the Pleiades, the seven Pleiades, even though we know there's more than 500 suns on that constellation, but we're concentrating on the seven, symbols and the seven Atlantides, how you say?
Atlantides. Yeah, the seven sisters were also referred to as the Atlantides, as well as the Pleiades. It's just the way it broke down in Greek mythology, because they were daughters of Atlas, which is where they referred to as the Atlantides, and the Pleiades, the sisters were referred to because of the connection through their mother.
Yeah, the Pleione. But here's the deal. So you have Alcyon as a center, and you have all of them rotating around the center as a pillar. There is a graphic that you can see this very clearly for those that have access to the part of the university. You go back to the, you know, guidebook over the Codex of the Pleiades, and you have there the graphic where you see Alcyon and the top and all the other seven organized as a, almost like a column, but inside of, you know, an orbit pattern. So you have this, you have the seven chakras, starting from the bottom to the top, where, which the top is Alcyon. So you have the seven chakras there, each one with a different tone or semitone that activates the chakras. So when you think about this in terms of you are the microcosm, microcosm, you are a reflection of what is macro, the biggest one, and which is more or less what you say, you know, so above, as above, so below.
This so is below. Where they got that from.
Yeah. So you are expression of the same rhythm, of the same model that created this universe, created star beings, that created angels, human beings, animals, and you know, and a diversity that is absolutely incredible and very difficult even to express. Our perception is like one-tenth of what really is out there. But going back, when you have this knowledge that the seven sisters are related to your seven chakras, you see as you open each one of those chakras, you open stars inside of yourself, and each one of those stars release a vibration, and each one of those vibration, it has to be in tune and at tune for you to be in perfect harmony of who you really are. So the top of it, is your, you know, the respective chakra that, you know, that is identified with Alcyon. Alcyon in itself, it would be the crown chakra, but actually the activation of Alcyon is a conjunction between the sixth, the third eye chakra and the crown chakra, exactly where your pineal gland is. So there is...
Which is referred to as the seat of Alcyon.
Yeah, the seat of Alcyon. So this is the entire process of the code, of the Stellar Code Alcyon, is a very subtle activation of your pineal gland that will allow you, through your own internal work, because what we can do is only attune you and start the process, you know, the ignite the process inside of yourself of attunement of your internal energy, your internal field of vibration, in order for you to start having access directly, not from wishful thinking. This is important. This is not wishful thinking. This is not the happy thoughts of law of attraction. I just need to think about it and it will happen. It doesn't work this way. You know, everything it demands work. The opening of chakra demands work. The opening and the liberation of blockages, you know, demands work. And sometimes pain. Not, I won't say suffering, but demands pain, because in order to release and open certain chakras, especially the cardiac chakra, you need to release guilt. You have to release unforgiving thoughts. You have to release all the wrong beliefs that you have about yourself and others.
And this can be painful.
It can be very painful because you have to release. Release is reassess, look, and have a courage to heal. So it can be painful, and it can be very, it is not something that like 1, 2, 3 is done.
Right, and what we're referring to here is not physical pain. What we're referring to here is mental or emotional pain. I mean, we tend to hang on to our anger or our not forgiving somebody pretty tightly. These become parts of our identity. We hang on to these. They're crutches. You know, I don't have to worry about you know, I don't have to try because I've got this pain. This is my wound file. And when we release those, and we start over, and it can be difficult. It can be challenging. And let me just take a minute here for those who haven't joined us on the Stellar Codes before. Is when we were talking about this, and what Liani was saying is that this isn't something we do for you. This is something you do for yourself. What we're doing is we're attuning you to a certain energy so you can make these connections. But the purpose of the Stellar Codes is to build your personal Antahkarana back to your soul. This is your connection from your earthly self to your lower self to your higher self. All of us are connected from the higher self to the lower self through the Sutrama. That's the silver cord everyone talks about. It's about the diameter of your thumb. Now, when we build Antahkarana back, we literally reweave this back, and we do this through the teachings of the Stellar Code and the practices that are that come with that. Now, the Stellar Code, you know, this is our name for a series of ancient teachings, but there's different schools that teach similar things on how to build back this communication with your soul. When you build back the Antahkarana, it's also referred to as the Rainbow Bridge, you're building back something, the diameter of your head. So if you think about the benefits of this, not only are you more soul-infused, you're more in tune with your soul and can understand your purpose, communicate with your higher self, do these sort of things, which are incredible, but the benefits of being able to do other things like heal, and help others is considerably enhanced. Because if you think about this, it's my famous garden hose analogy. You know, we're flowing healing energy down from our higher selves to our lower selves through our Sutrama, which is the diameter of your thumb, right? When you build back your Antahkarana, which is the size of your head, think how much bigger this diameter is and how much more healing energy and compassion and all these other things coming from your soul down can flow. It's just bigger. And this is what we're trying to do. This is how you become more soul infused. So that's ultimately the purpose of the Stellar Codes and the connection we're doing. But as I said, we don't do this for you. This is something that we help you to do yourself, to make the connection, and then this is something you build through your spiritual practice. Because as we always say, a spiritual practice is just that, it's practice. It does require work. It does require a commitment to reconnect and remember and all those wonderful rewords.
Well, but here's the thing. For those that have been with us since the beginning of the Stellar Code, we have been going chakra by chakra. We have been going and, you know, and each month we had a series of points, even marma points, in each one of the bodies, physical and extra-physical bodies, and then did blockages. And each one of them has in itself an archetypical journey and a series of experiences that there is a scope of possibilities of things that you will deal with. For instance, when we did the Stellar Code on Taurus, we open up the situation of working with family relationships. So we knew the spectrum of pain and situations that will start. Now we're getting to the end of the first year of the Stellar Code. We are opening the first access consciously to the Temple of Initiation. And this is done through your connection through Halcyon. And is absolutely a very important and crucial point, because through Halcyon, we develop the final stage of being a pillar of light. Again, let's go back of the meaning of the Pleiades or the Atlantides. Atlas, daughters of Atlas, the king of Atlantis, actually meant the one that supported Atlantis over his shoulders. Or actually, Atlantis was a city that was known for supporting you know, the entire world. The wisdom, the story, of course, got corrupted, but basically it started that way. So Atlas and Atlantis are the pillars, or the, you know, the substructor that forms and help you activate your internal pillar of light, of being actually fully operated anchors of light, the ones that, you know, it's multi-wired to be a light worker, a light weaver, and a light warrior. This has been our process, our spiritual journey through the stellar codes. Now, one more time, when we go back to Atlantis, the Atlantides, the Pleiades, we go back to Atlas. Atlas has the power of, you know, which would be, so the Pleiades, they are our chakras. Atlas will be our spine, the one that carries our body and support the column of light.
This is the central channel.
The central channel. Funny enough, the less vertebrae that actually support our cranium into our head, you know, its shoulders, it's called Atlas. You know, so it's funny, but it's not funny.
Well, it's interesting how it all ties together, that modern medicine would actually refer to the final vertebrae that supports, you know, our cranium as Atlas.
Yeah, so you have a rewrite of the history of Atlantis multidimensionally, you know, with the flood of Atlantis, you know, you can speak of this in a more metaphysical way, that maybe it happened physically, but also happened in each one of human beings that experienced that and pass as a hereditarian memory, I don't know how to say it.
Hereditary memory.
A memory, or, you know, a hereditary wound. Through all of us, the flood that ruined Atlantis was the fall into materiality. You know, Atlantis, which was our cranium or our pineal gland, got flooded by other thoughts that deactivate, entire shut down to a minimum function of our chakras, and actually turn all of the chakras, you know, in puny sizes and very debilitated most of the time. You know, through the work of the stellar codes, we pumped up our chakras and we collapsed the space between the chakras, and we did all this exercise, the spiritual exercise, for almost a year.
Now, we should point out that for those who are just coming in to look at participating with the stellar codes, that the stellar codes are not, you don't have to start at point A and go A, B, C, D. They're complementary codes. We refer to them as strands that we're weaving together. So you can start at any point in the year and continue on around and learn them. If you have to, we have people that have had to miss a month or miss 2 months, and that's fine. They'll just catch them next cycle. The stellar codes go throughout the year, and once you get through the year, they just start over again. It follows the path of the stars.
You cannot, and this is because actually time doesn't exist. For us, you know, we have the concept of time is chronological, but on the time of the soul, on the time of the superior mind, there is not a linear base. It's multidimensionally and multi-temporal, and it can be everything simultaneously. So whatever issues, because we binded by, you know, Chronos time, even though the works of the stellar code happens in another level, what you call under the auspices of another god of time, which is Kairos. It's a psychological time, present, past, and future on the now. You know, that's the reason, and that's based on this knowledge, which is ancient knowledge, that the time inside of you is the one that counts. You know, so in any point that you want to start your journey, a spiritual journey through the stellar codes, you can. If there is some difficulties, You know, we deal with cases, case by cases, and sometimes we build bridges, temporary ACA cords of bridges, to you able to walk by yourself.
That where we run into that most often is for people that have not had one of the codes that haven't had a light maker or a light weaver before they get to the light warrior codes, which tend to be a little bit more intensive, and as a result, we tend to put up an ACA cord or a bridge to help the seeker with that until they fully flesh out one of the other cords.
Another thing that it's very interesting that we bring this about again, even though we mentioned that before, is that we're working with the pleads, but we're not working with the pleadians. We respect their work, but we don't work with them. We work with the stellar beings, with, like, if you're working with Gaia, Mother Earth, she is a planetary being. We, are those that work with the Ascended Masters and the solar beings of our sun, Helios and Vesta, they are stellar beings. We work with the stellar beings of those stars.
Yeah, we're not working with the denizens of the solar systems. We're working with the energetic signature of the solar system.
That's the difference between our work and some of the other works. I'm not saying they're invalid at all.
But this is what we do.
This is what we do. And the reason being is that, and like I said, in the Pleiades, we have at least 500 suns. They're all solar beings, they're all stellar beings, but the planetary, like ourselves here, we have Mother Earth, which is a giving soul that tried to teach us and live on service for others and for the greater good of all. Our biggest discrepancy as humans here is that you have half of humanity living through the heart and living for the greater good and living for the service of others, and you have a majority, another half, I would say half, but of people that live in service yourself, and they can pretty much decimate the other half. It's not her fault. So you have 500, at least 500 stellar beings, and more, I don't cannot even count the amount of planetary beings, but you cannot guarantee that everybody from the Pleiades are the best thing. Like the same way you cannot guarantee that all the human beings are the best thing ever, or the example of human beings on Earth are the best out there in this solar system. So because we won't go there, I confess I have a certain limitation on the contact with the Pleiadians in general, I can tell you that our work is basically strict to the signature of the stellar beings, which are all in nature archangelic. So this is basic our work.
But the problem is there's so much good information with the stellar code. We'd love to discuss this. We could really go off on lots of tangents talking about things and also talking for hours. But let's go back to where we were talking about the archetypical journey based on the mythologies of the system. We were talking about Atlas and Atlantis, which is, Atlas was the first king of Atlantis. He and his brothers were the children of Poseidon and I won't say not Alcyon, but Pleione. Yes, and these were the first kings of Atlantis according to tradition, and how this all came about. That's that part of the mythology. The other part that we talk about as we go through the stellar codes, which are in a large part based on probably the most famous archetypical journey, which is that of Hercules. the 12 labors of Hercules are all representative of your path towards...
the 12 constellations.
It goes through the 12 constellations. But it's, you know, Hercules is a perfect example for all of us. He was half God, half man. He was born of the god, born of human. And he had to go through his trials and follow his spiritual path in order to reconnect with his divinity, which is what we're trying to do. And to do that, he was assigned different tasks, which are representative of our tasks and what we need to do in order to reconnect with our divinity. Now, the labor of Hercules that this particular stellar code is dealing with was the cattle, which were the cattle of Giron or Gurion, or
I don't know how to pronounce that at all. You know, you guys have a different way to pronounce things than I do. But I'm Portuguese.
You know, for those that don't know, there was the 12 labors of Hercules. You know, Hercules was bound to this particular king to achieve 10 tasks for him, but he ended up getting 12 out of them before he was allowed to continue on with his journey. And some of the more famous were, for instance, when he went down into the underworld and brought the dog Cerberus to the light. You know, this has to do with the dweller of the threshold, which was one of the earlier stellar codes. But the cattle is one of the ones that's least known, and it's an interesting labor, because what Hercules pretty much had to do is to travel to the end of the world, according to
the legend,
the people of the time, which was what they call now the Pillars of Hercules, which was is now the Straits of Gibraltar, and bring back this cattle. Now the cattle was protected, of course, by one of the litter mates from the dog Cerberus, and by another Titan. And he killed those. This particular stellar code, everywhere Hercules went, trying to bring these cattle back, there was devastation and destruction and chaos, because herding a giant herd of very wild cattle back from one end of the world to the other, of course. Everybody scattered them. Everyone wanted one of the bulls for their own thing, and Hercules was having to, run every which way to try to keep things together. But the purpose of this archetypical journey is
the thing of the cattle in itself is the symbolism of the sign of Taurus. And for those that know that they're, a little bit of ancient history, of ancient mythology, you have traditionally, in some of the religions, the importance of the Taurus, the ox. You have the Minotaur, which was partially man, partially, a Taurus. You have the sacrificial Taurus by the god Mitra. In ancient Rome, was an ox was sacrificed to the gods in order to the blood of the gods, of the blood of the ox, was said to pacify the Roman gods. But this is all symbolic, because inside, and it said that on the temple of Atlantis, the priests painted the outside of the temple with the with blood. But if you look at this as a metaphor, the temple of Atlantis, like I said, it could have happened as a spirit, as a physical situation on Earth, but it's reproduced in our microcosmos, inside of our bodies, and specifically our etheric body. The temple of Atlantis is inside of our head, is our cranium. inside, the jewel inside, is the activation or of a pineal gland that can be activated by, you know, really very much tuned up and activated with the stellar code of, with Alcyon, you know, connecting you definitely with the temple of the central sun. But outside of the, you know, what they said, outside of the temple, of the Atlantean temple, there was blood. Of course, outside of the cortex, between the scalp, the bone, and your brain, it's all, you know, there is blood. This is the outside of the temple. There is blood. So when they describe the sacrifice, or, you know, the ancient prescription of the temple of, and how the rituals happened in Temple of Atlantis, they were actually describing the functions of the brain. It was not only a history on or how to make, of course, men interpreted this any other way. It was not meant to be a how to make sacrifice to appease gods, but it's more like how your brain functions. The pillars, you know, the central pillar, which was Atlas, that hold the earth, you know, up on his shoulders, the earth or the universe in his shoulders. The universe, our universe, is here, is our head.
Much of the ancient knowledge, much of the ancient traditions have been passed down to us through the use of mythology and parables. And that is what we are working on to, that's how we help pass on this information and teach also, by breaking some of these down to get a little bit better understanding of how that applies to us today and our spiritual path. But what we were talking about earlier as far as what we do with this particular journey of Hercules, this labor, has to do with killing the beast within, or the...
Yes, because what it really made, you know, and everybody knows why Atlantis fell. Atlantis fell because they start actually going against what you call white magic, which was a natural capability of human beings to connect. And they became, you know... I'm talking about the history as it's said by
according
to tradition. I'm not talking about the rewriting of the stories that we have nowadays in the spiritual community that actually were taken by, you know, alien beings that such and such. I'm talking about the way it was taught and it was passed through oral tradition, through, you know, the comments of inside of Kabbalah, Zohar, and when you do a comparative study of those oral traditions, and some of them were, you know, confirmed afterwards with
Nag Hammadi
and the other texts.
Which is one of the reasons why we're touching on the Essenes right now and some of their teachings in other parts of Humanity Healing University. All this ties together.
So what we're talking about is how Atlantis fell. Atlantis fell because, you know, the higher mind or the higher beings were tainted by lower energies, which means we fell from grace. When, you know, the fall of man, it was a metaphysical, was a metaphoric, and, you know, physically felt.
In a hierarchical.
Yes. Yeah, fall, you know, it has to do with everything but with the fact that we ate an apple.
Yeah.
going back. So it's a metaphor, the fall of Atlantis, the flood of Atlantis, the flood of the lower nature that invaded the higher realm. This is the fight that you have against evil. What is the devil? You know, the devil within is exactly the forces that we battle now.
Your baser nature.
Or the ego nature. The ego, as we, you know, we live and we try to tame, and in order to diminish their influence so we can be more so infused. By no means I'm saying that, you know, the ego should be eliminated. The ego should be tamed. The ego is a powerful instrument and is a basic device to operate in three dimensions.
It's part of you. It's not the master of you.
Exactly. So it's like we say, you need, when you came to existence, you receive the physical body, and you also receive a, you know, an astral body or etherical body, a light body, if you want to say, that's not fully activated, but you have it.
Yeah, everybody comes with one. You don't have to go to somebody to have them give you a light body. It's part of your package already.
Yeah, it comes like, it comes with the, you know, the enchilada. It comes a physical body, it comes an ego, and it comes a light body. You can develop the light body, yes. How you develop a light body is starting to tame your ego. You're starting to, you know, work on your physical body in order to have all your extra physical bodies integrated harmonically so you can be one being, just one, on all your nature, you know, and integrated.
And all, on all your multidimensional levels.
So this is basically the story, and the taming of the cattle, you know, which was a kind of a crazy animal with three heads and legs coming out of their waist. You know, can you imagine something like that? It's like a beast. It's the taming or the slaying of the beast that will be manifested in another level as a luminous energy, which, you know, the soul perceives in a different way than we do through our egoic perception. But anyhow, yeah, apparently I have been talking too much.
Well, you know, we always tend to get going and keep talking because there's so much more information than we really have time for.
Yeah, but anyhow, let me just put it one
more
aspect.
Let's finish this thing.
So when you do, when we go through the process of activation of Alcyon, you have, you know, we have been, like I said, building the process over the seven chakras. We activate the last, I would say, grip, which is the energy of Atlas itself to activate. But we're going to work with regions and points on the head that is known, you know, as the activation of your chalice, or, you know, the 12 points of the 12 stars, and it's like your connection with the basic, not basic, but the transcendent energy of the Cosmic Mother, which biblically you find on the esoteric writings of the Apostle John when he talks about the woman clothed with sun.
This is in the book of Revelation. This is the woman clothed with the sun who just happens to be wearing a crown of 12 stars.
12 stars, which are the 12 stellar codes. So with Alcyon, we activate your pineal, and we activate and, you know, attune finally 12 different points on your cranium to receive the crown, or to activate the chalice, because actually you can, you know, mystically or in religious painting, it's like a crown of stars, but it's the same principle of the crown of Isis in Egypt that actually has a U format as a chalice. This is the sacred chalice that holds the, you know, divine energy within.
Well, it's interesting, that representation of the chalice also includes a representation of the soul star, which is one of the things that we work with
during
this process. Now, real quick, to tie this up before we go to the question and answer portion, this particular stellar code goes up through the festival of Wesak.
Yes. So we're going to prepare, all of us, we're going to prepare the next month when we start this process. We'll be a month preparing. You know, we're going to release the book. We're going to go through the exercises together and have the activation and the attunement so you can have actually a more clear, and what our goal is to have a clear and mindful awakened awareness on the participation of this big spiritual festival, which is Vesak. For those that don't know, Vesak festival happens in the full moon of Taurus every year on the mystical city of Shambhala. There is known to say as the White Island. Shambhala is a white island, and by the way,
this is where
Atlantis,
the ascended masters live.
Yes, and funny enough is that Atlantis also was, you know, in certain ancient languages, and funny enough, Atlas, Atlantean,
right.
Stuff, it was also one of the gods of the Mayans, Atlan.
Well, it's interesting, this particular word, Atlas, doesn't really have a root in the European languages, so where the Greeks got it from, there's not sure, but they are tied in both with Nahuatl in Mesoamerica, which refers to water, etc.
And White Island.
And it's also tied into the language from Tibet, referring to to the carry upon one's shoulders.
Yes, and so it is another thing, and it's a white island. You know, the only white island we have inside of ourselves is our brain. But Shambhala is known to be the white island of spirituality, and it's said by tradition that, you know, Shambhala is in maybe somewhere between the deserts of Gobi and the Himalayas. And once a year during the Festival of Vesak, only the chosen ones can be participate with the masters, the celebration and the balancing of karma and acquirement of ascension degrees on with Shambhala in the festival. So it's for the spiritual community.
It's a pretty big deal.
Worldwide is one of the, you know, I would say the pinnacles of the year, and it was one of the most strongest part time of the year that you really can feel the help of the masters, you know, in our very 3D world. It's a moment of reflection, it's a moment to internalization, is a moment of grounding, is a moment more than ever of connection with your divine part, and, you know, as one in this universe, as part of the note, no, one more note that plays the cosmic symphony. So that's our goal. Our goal is to process in the next month through the Stellar Code the activation of not only the seven Pleiades and Atlas and also Aldebaran, which is one of our biggest stars that represents Archangel Michael, and also the 12 points
of the stellium.
Of the stellium or your chalice. So is the activation of the 12 points of your cranium. So this is basically...
Yeah, this and of course, this is all completely clear in your mind. You understand exactly what we're doing now.
Yeah, well, anyhow, we open...
There's a lot of information. We'll have the e-book up on the hierarchical journey, the archetypical journey, and then for those who are participating in the code itself, the guidebook appendix, which will come out, which will have the spiritual techniques and the meditations and the exercises to in-tune yourself to prepare for the attunement that we will be doing. But right now, I'm going to go ahead and pause. I'm going to switch us over to a conversation mode, and people will be able to ask questions. If you're in a noisy environment, if you could do *6, that mutes your phone, and then unmute it when you want to ask a question by hitting *6 again. But in the meantime, it's going to be going to conference call, and hopefully there are actually people out there listening to us that will have a question or two. So let me switch this over just a second.